Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, Chaz K's fine audio collage concludes. It's on work and wages, poverty and wealth, and it's a treat to the mind and ears. I hope you'll stay tuned. We return for part two of the once sort of lost, now sort of rediscovered audio collage, Observations on Work. Released in 2006, it's one of the earliest and one of the best by the late Virtual Renderings, Chaz K. In part two, we'll hear some more wise words by progressive political scientist Michael Parenti. We'll hear also from journalist Barbara Ehrenreich talking about her hands-on research in low-wage jobs. Plus some really fascinating music, corporate propaganda, poetry, and whatnot. We'll pick up Observations on Work with Michael Parenti, speaking on wealth inequality.
During the last three decades, the richest 1% in this country saw their average after-tax incomes increase by 115%, while the incomes of the poorest fifth declined by almost 10%. U.S. Census Bureau income studies refer to the richest 20% who earned 13 times more than the poorest 20%. But being in the top 20% doesn't make you rich. All you have to do is earn $65,000 or more. It's really upper middle class, if that. The top 20% are not the rich. The very richest stratum consists of not more than a tiny fraction of 1% of the population. That 1% controls most of the wealth, and that 1% is not 13 times richer than the poorest people, not 30 times richer, but really 1,000 times or more richer than the poorest 20%. Few of the people who study income distribution seem to realize how rich the rich really are, and that's because the U.S. Census Bureau doesn't sample incomes over $1 million. Income and wealth differences are greater than at any time over the previous 60 years. As one economist put it, if we made an income pyramid out of children's play blocks, with each block representing $1,000 of income, most of us would not go more than a yard or so off the ground. But the peak for the super rich would be a tower of blocks that's many times higher than the Eiffel Tower itself.
Used to have a town, but the factory moved away. Down to Mexico, where they work for hardly
I was fascinated by the assumption that a woman could get a job and then be lifted out of poverty just by virtue of having a job and be able to support her children and everything would be fine. Actually, it gets worse than that. I don't know if you know the Bush administration's other big emphasis for women on welfare. Their big solution for poverty among women is that women, low-income women, should get married. Anybody here ever been married? Yeah. I mean, any women been married? I mean, it doesn't really work that way. One of the things they don't understand, and it, I mean, there's so many things, like not all women are heterosexual, but we'll leave that aside, is that most women who are poor are likely to marry men of their own class. And in the United States, working class men, blue collar men, have really seen their wages fall drastically in the last two decades. So I once sat down to calculate how many men a woman has to marry to lift her out of poverty. And it is a number greater than two, which is, strangely enough, illegal.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can. Do you know how many people wanna work in this old land? Well, I woke up singing America, 'cause that song still rings true. Now I'm supposed to do anything that they want me to do. Well, I used to work real hard till my job left my backyard. I finally got my life together, trying to make it better.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can. Do you know how many people wanna work in other lands?
I sang America back in school. Now I don't know what to do.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can.
I'd like to apply for a job. Yes, the job you have available. My manner is most saleable, and I hope you'll find me suitable for $5.15 an hour. I really have the skills, you see. I've been to university, and though I studied history, I found my heart to truly be in men's ties and socks, glass figurines, the discount shoe industry. What makes me think I'd be good for this job? Well, I love working with people. And I love riding the subway an hour and a half each way. Let's see, add those hours to my day, and I'll be making a whopping $3.75 an hour. No, sir, I do want the job. Can't you tell by my suit? No, actually, I don't own a dress. I don't feel comfortable, I confess. But hell, for $5.15 an hour, I'll endeavor to wear some colors other than black. I enjoy working with the public, and I'm good with money. Oh, yes, you're right. All us girls are good with money. Yes, that's charming. Yes, how funny. I like a good work atmosphere where the boss says whatever he wants and the rest of us just listen. I'm a very fast learner, and I promise that if you give me this job, I'll be the perfect subhuman and never let my contempt shine in my worshipping eyes. I love working with people, and let's see, what else was I going to tell you? No, I don't expect vacation pay, and yes, I'm available every day, and though I don't like the evil way you're looking at me, I've got rent to pay.
Sorry.
And yes, I can start on Saturday.
We were looking for someone with lots of experience and manners.
Happy workers.
What I did not do so well at was making ends meet with the wages I earned. In these jobs, I averaged $7 an hour. I don't know what that trans. I don't know what the current exchange rate is, but four or five pounds, which is about the minimum wage in this country. Yeah, that is well above the U.S. minimum wage. The U.S. nationwide minimum wage is $5.15. So I was above the minimum. In fact, at $7 an hour as one person, I did not even qualify as poor by the U.S. federal definition of poverty. I wasn't poor. I was fine, according to the government. But I could not really make ends meet, although in many cases I had more than one job at a time. You know, I would sometimes two jobs in the same day, very, very difficult with physically demanding jobs, sometimes just jobs working 7 days a week. And what completely undid me was housing costs. If I had children with me, it would have probably been child care costs too that undid me.
It was the people, it was the American people, it was the working people in this country who fought and fought for the eight-hour day, who fought for public education, who fought for public health services. It was the people who fought for decent housing and a decent standard of living, who fought for a minimum wage, who fought against discrimination. Name one great leader, name one great political leader, name one great great intellectual who fought and did those things. No, those people, they jumped on the bandwagon after the people fought. And it was the plutocrats, it was the capitalists, it was the economic royalists who fought against every one of those things. They fought against giving you a decent wage. They're still fighting against that. They're still fighting for wage cuts. They fought against Social Security. They fought against occupational safety. They're still fighting against it. They fought against environmental protections. They still are fighting against it, undermining it every way they can, because they're afraid they're going to lose out on a dollar. Because every dollar they've got to give to you, every dollar they've got to spend on stupid things like public safety and wages and occupational safety and consumer product safety, every dollar wasted on stupid things like that, which the free market would take care of, every dollar spent on that is one less dollar for their insatiable greed. And that's it. So don't credit the capitalists for giving you whatever modicum of prosperity you have. We got it despite it. We tore it out of their teeth and out of their greedy claws. And we still got to hold on to it, and they're trying to get it back from us.
Every job was hard. For example, at Walmart, my job was in ladies' wear. Now, that sounded really genteel to me. I thought I would be giving fashion advice to the women of Minnesota. But no, what I was doing was returning clothing that had somehow gotten to the floor or been secreted in some wrong spot by customers or had been tried on, putting it in its exactly right place, which meant memorizing the locations of hundreds of items, which would then be rotated every few days to convince me I had Alzheimer's. But so that took my entire concentration. Similarly, waitressing. I mean, waitresses invented multitasking. That is, you know, there is no moment in which your mind is free for something else. So that was one important lesson for me from all this. No job is unskilled. Every job takes skill and intelligence and certainly a lot of concentration.
Cut down the forest, the big ones here. Cover the ground with a massive tire. Make sure there's room for every car. One floor, half mile, massive sprawl. One floor, wonder, super mall. It's spreading out far and wide, taking over the countryside. Say goodbye to your forests, they're going down. Chinese prisoners will sweat and bleed, and you'll get all the stuff you need. Walton's children, profit markets reap, buying low and selling cheap. What happens to mom and pop? Turn the key and close the shop. Say goodbye to your city, it's going down. Store, see the diner shut its door. No more neighbors you can meet, more ghosts and people on the street. No more jobs with living pay. Sam Walton took it all away. Beneath the lights, the work you bear, the lucky ones can get on welfare. Forget your children's cap and gown.
You know, there's an enormous industry in this nation that is churning out day after day at the cost of billions of dollars the sensation, entirely erroneous, in the body politic that everything is okay and everything's going to keep on being just the way it is now on into the indefinite future. And to continue to produce the impression which creates the best reception of this falsehood is a tremendous drain on human energy and resources.
1, 2, 3, 4. Coal fires burning, deforestation, cookie cutter houses, no reparation. Cars, cars everywhere, highways, asphalt, extracting cobalt. Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Pastor pigeons, sea turtles, prairie dogs, dodo, red wolf, black bear, bald eagle, buffalo, no habitat extinction, bison, salmon. Millions of species are gone, gone, gone. Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Rich folks like stealing all the resources. Pouring global south off, feeling it the worst. Promises, promises, we'll get our share. The planet we live on gets stripped bare. Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Industrial civilization
is a pyramid scheme.
Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Just waiting for the benefits to be seen.
Creating the poor. Many compassionate people castigate the very rich and powerful for their lack of concern for the poor. But I've come to the conclusion that the very rich are anything but indifferent to the poor. They are quite mindful of keeping the poor in their place, of having them work as hard as possible for as little as possible. The very rich have a real concern that the working poor do not become too elevated in their collective class condition. Indeed, the owning class sees such a development as threatening to its own vital interests. Throughout the ages, the rich have argued that the poor are the authors of their own poverty. In 17th century England, impoverished people were thought to be the victims of their own, quote, idle, irregular, and wicked courses. Little has changed since then. In 1995, Republican leader Newt Gingrich reduced poverty to a matter of personal inclination. Quote, I am prepared to say to the poor, you have to learn new habits. The habits of being poor don't work. Unquote. Meanwhile, Gingrich tirelessly pursued policies to enlarge the ranks of the poor, just as our Republican leadership in the White House and Congress do today. They fight to shift still more of the tax burden onto low- and middle-income people. They fight to eliminate the minimum wage, to cut spending for public housing, and to abolish school lunches, food stamps, and aid to families with dependent children. They support enormous tax cuts for the corporate rich. They do everything they can to deregulate business activities, downgrade jobs, downsize workforces, and break labor unions. All policies that have led to both deeper and more widespread poverty and greater accumulations of wealth for the super rich. For affluent people, the poor are less than human, demoralized creatures who seem to prefer squalor and misery, freeloaders who live off the rest of us. When they do work, they want to be paid too much for too little effort,
according to the super rich. And when they organize into unions, they become troublesome barriers to productivity and prosperity. All this we hear again and again. And yet, you'll find that there's no real mass support in the general American public for the mean-spirited cuts that have been imposed by a Republican Congress and White House. One survey found that 80% of the public felt that society and government had a moral obligation to alleviate poverty. About the same number reject the right-wing argument that poverty is to be blamed on the poor themselves, rather than on the material economic conditions that beset the poor. In contrast to right-wing Republicans, those of more liberal persuasion see poverty as a problem created by hard times, substandard schools and housing, deteriorating neighborhoods, a lack of much-needed public programs. If people are poor, it's not because they're lazy and irresponsible. 70% of the families that live in poverty have someone, at least one person, working full-time. If they're poor, it's because they're being paid poverty wages and they have to pay high prices for things and are burdened with all sorts of regressive taxes. Poverty, then, is a product of the accumulation of wealth. The wealthy need the poor. The wealthy live off the backs of the poor.
I spent my whole life making somebody rich. I busted my ass for that son of a bitch. And he left me to die like a dog in a ditch. And he told me I'm all used up. He used up my labor, he used up my time. He plundered my body and squandered my mind. And gave me a pension of handouts and wine. And told me I'm all used up. My kids are in hock to a gotcha call work, slaving their lives out for some other jerk. Yeah, my youngest in Frisco just made shipping clerk. He don't know I'm all used up. Hey, young people reaching for power and gold don't have respect for anything old. For pennies they're bought and for promises sold. Someday they'll all be used up. They use up the oil, they use up the trees, they use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up? I'll finish my life in this crummy hotel. It's lousy with bugs and my God, what a smell. But my plumbing still works and I'm clear as a bell. Don't tell me I'm all used up.
In a forest of stone underneath a corporate canopy where the sun rarely filters down, the ground is not so soft, it's not so soft. They build buildings to house people making money, or they build buildings to make money off of housing people. It's true, like a lot of things are true. I'm foraging for a phone booth on the forest floor that is not so soft. I look up, it looks like the buildings are burning, but it's just the sun setting in the windows, the solar system calling an end to another business day, eternally circling, signaling the rhythmic clicking on and off of computers, the pulse of the American machine, the pulse that draws death dancing out of anonymous side streets, you know, the ones that always get dumped on and never get plowed. It draws death dancing out of little countries with funny languages where the ground is getting harder and it was not that soft before. And those who call the shots are never in the line of fire. Why? When there's life for hire out there, if a flag of truth were raised, we could watch every liar rise to wave it. Here we learn America like a script. Playwright, birthright, same thing. We bring ourselves to the role. We're all rehearsing for the presidency. I always wanted to be commander-in-chief of my one-woman army.
We are Americans.
Drummer, plumber, soda jerk.
Strike up the band. We are Americans.
Stoker, broker, barber, clerk.
United we stand. We're a voting population, a free and equal nation. Our freedom rings so our
freedom from want and freedom from fear.
Ooh, wait.
fights the battles for the free.
The common man.
Preacher.
Teacher.
Engineer.
Biller.
Miller.
Financier.
Who wins the final victory?
The common man.
Common man with common sense. Our forefathers did it. Liberty's life. With blood and faith and fight. We will spread it.
How do you deal with the corporatization of the executive branch of the government behaving like a corporation? And corporations are anti-democratic organizations. And that's becoming more and more pervasive. Well, you resist.
Babylon, a civilized behavioral notoriety. The more evil the empire, the more paranoid the society. Building to the new world order, we're expected to carry the stone. Emperors and the feeding class, human beings being used up fast. The miners keep on mining. Intelligence is the mother lode. Imagination as an energy source in this predator's way of dining. Defining how and what we think, as we're led to the way to believe. Conditioned reaction we call thought. Our reality guides in how we perceive.
Observations on Work by the late Chaz K. Virtual Renderings. It's from 2006, but alas, still entirely relevant. If you missed part one last week, or anything else, you can grab yourself a free copy at our website. That's at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. Illegitimi non carborundum, don't mourn, organize, and please tune in again next week. Till then.